presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Stephanie Orm from Emmanuel College in Boston, Massachusetts in the US.
And I'm Brian McCauley from here in Sweden, where I work at the Media Management and Transformation Center in the city of DreamHack, Jönköping. And our guest today is Dr. Seth Jenny, who is an assistant professor at Slippery Rock University in Pennsylvania in the US of A. Welcome to the show, Seth, and please tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. Thanks for the invitation, Brian and Stephanie. I teach in the Department of Exercise and Rehabilitative Sciences at Slippery Rock. That is in Pennsylvania in the U.S. I'm one of the founding members of the Esports Research Network. I'm on the editorial board of the International Journal of Esports, which we'll be talking about one of the papers that I co-wrote in that first issue. I'm the performance, one of the advisors to Kovac 2.0, the Meta, which is an FPS aim training software. And I'm also the advisor to the SRU Esports Club. So yeah, it's a little bit about me.
Awesome. You're a busy guy, Seth.
Yeah. Yes. And I teach a full 12 credit load as well. Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So we always like to start off our show by asking all of our guests how they define esports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can read 25 pages in one of the first esports papers that I wrote in 2016, called Virtually Athletes, Where Esports Fit Within the Definition of Sport. And across that, we discuss how esports fits into defining sports. But in that paper, we define it as organized competitive video gaming. I can certainly elaborate on that. I did for 25 pages, or we can.
All right, give us one or two more. What would you add to that? I mean, that's the basic one. What's your personal choice to add to it?
To qualify what we mean by organized is that there's a set rules within it, that there is a clear winner and loser, and that the resulting of the competition is based upon skill and not luck. Those would be some other defining characteristics of what is esports.
Disagree that it's always skill, because there's a lot of guys in CSGO getting lucky against me.
I was gonna say, you're just gonna be salty
in general.
So, as a researcher,
if we want to dig into that, so that's one of the reasons why some people will say chess is not a sport, because the physical movements of moving a chess piece doesn't determine the winner or the loser. It doesn't matter how you pick up the chess piece, but it certainly matters the way that you manipulate a controller and a mouse. And it's the same with any type of gambling, or it couldn't necessarily be a sport, because it's the winner is based upon luck and not skill. Now, certainly you could say that poker is skillful, because there's strategy behind that. But if you're just pushing a button and waiting for a result, then that's not the way you push the button isn't dependent upon whether you win or lose. So
fair enough. Yeah. So you kind of do a little bit of a broad spectrum of esport research. You kind of did a little bit of everything. I kind of similar sometimes, and maybe it's not the best way to do it, but what's your main interest when it comes to research in esports?
I started off in video gaming research, particularly extra gaming research, and looking at the integration of video games into physical education. And then it moved into more of esports when universities in the U.S. started offering college scholarships, and more departments started recognizing esports as an official varsity sport under their Department of Athletics. And that's when I sort of moved into esports research as compared to video gaming research. So those areas are always major interest to me. So the collegiate scene, the performance side of esports, the health and wellness side of esports are some of the major interests. Impacts of exercise in esports performance. And then I have a lot of colleagues that are sport management professors. And so that's why I also have a significant amount of research done in the sport management field of esports, because I do a lot of collaborations. And I a lot of times assist with data collection and formulating the manuscripts and idea generation and all facets of the process. But it's why it's a little bit more of an eclectic approach to esports research.
Is that a multidisciplinary endeavor for you, Seth? You mentioned you're in like a kinesiology department, right?
Yeah, and so I'm just starting to do more. I've since 2013 or so, I've been doing motion-based video gaming research, but now I'm starting to get into more of the health side of research. I'm doing a research project right now with the New York Institute of Technology with Joanne Donahue, and we're looking at the impacts of complete rest and exercise, light walking on prolonged gaming performance and executive functioning while playing FPS games. And so that's hits more of the exercise science piece to it.
Very cool. is it get off your ass while you're playing and take a little break, go for a little walk, and your performance will improve? Because I had a terrible day yesterday. Should I have gone for a walk?
Probably would have improved, but we're in data collection, or we just finished data collection, so now we're doing data analysis. So I'll let you know in a few weeks whether your performance would have improved or not.
Fair enough.
I definitely, whenever I'm feeling stuck on writing, I take a gaming break. So
yeah,
I look forward to these results.
For sure.
So Seth, you have another project that you recently published in the International Journal of Esports that I think has been getting quite a bit of attention about the valuation of the esports industry. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found and what was going on and how that sort of challenges what had previously kind of been the dominant narrative, if you will, about the industry's overall value?
Sure. So co-wrote this paper with Joseph Ahn and William Collis. They both are the co-founders of Team Genji, which is now called the Oxygen Esports. Joseph was one of the main drivers to the paper. He works in the executive office of the United States President in the Office of Management and Budget. So he's in their economic policy division. So and then William also is a esports management adjunct professor at Becker College. Both of them are Harvard MBAs. So a little bit different level than Slippery Rock, not to say that we're not the Harvard of Western Pennsylvania. So we looked at typically when people will talk about why you should be interested in esports and why you should pay attention, why you should invest in esports, they cite the Newzoo statistic that the esports industry is worth $1.1 billion. And when you look at some other articles and you talk about and you see that in 2019, the investment size of esports was $1 billion. When you look at the revenue of Fortnite, which this is one of the arguable things of is that an esport or not, but their revenue in 2019 was $1.8 billion. How is the industry worth $1.1 billion if one of the games within it made $1.8 and the investment being brought into it is the same level as what's being made? It didn't make sense. And so what we did is we used, William has written a book that I encourage everybody to check out. It's called The Book of Esports. And in it, he has what's called the entire esports ecosystem model, which it breaks down the esports industry into six major sections. And what we do is we mathematically show, based upon each of those six sectors of the esports industry, how that industry, we believe, is closer to $25 billion. And those six sectors are teams, professional players, and streamers is one sector, the game publishers, the streaming platforms is the third, physical products, so like companies that sell gaming products, is the fourth, leagues and tournaments is the fifth, and then the last sector is digital tools, so companies that sell digital gaming products that enable people to communicate, operate, and improve their esports performance. And so we discuss about the business models within each of those sectors and the value chains and the actors in the categories, and then provide mathematical equations to show how much each of those sectors are worth in our estimation. And then we totaled up to be $25 billion. And the largest sector, which we estimated the game publishers were at about $16 billion, which they massively dominate the industry.
Seth, I've never said this before to another academic about their paper, but thank you. Thank you for your paper. This has been driving me nuts as everyone's going 1 billion. And I'm there going, oh, it's 500 million audience, you know, when you're pitching for grants or you're trying to justify what you're doing in your university. And then I'm going, and 1 billion revenue, because it doesn't sound as good. And looking at myself, you know, I've got like four or five hoodies, got my mouse, my headset, my paraphernalia, just these €50 worth of CSGO skins. That was research. All this stuff I've spent, I'm not even a diehard consumer. All the food and drinks I've consumed at DreamHacker ESL events, the souvenirs I've brought back, little toys all over my office. You know, I've spent a fortune on esports without even trying. And, you know, I'm only one person of 500 million. And this really, really frustrated me that these valuations happened. And I think what's really important is that your paper actually gives other academics an opportunity to justify their research, because now we have 500 million people and a growing market of 25 billion. And it used to drive me bananas that the $150 billion game industry and 0.75% of that was esports. And you're going, that can't be true. Then I have people saying, no, it's true. And I'm going, it can't be true. Without even researching it, my logic just said so. So thank you very much. I think it's a very important paper, and we'll have a link below this video because it's also open access. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also very good for people in business. And I think we should be trying to encourage people operating in the business sector to be able to point to your valuation as something that will actually help grow the industry and support entrepreneurs and innovators, because suddenly there's more backing potential for them because it's really good. Have you had any direct negative criticism or feedback or...
Why do you gotta go negative?
It's drama.
All right, yeah. Come on, give us the gossip. Sure. And honestly, we don't have a problem with Nuzu. What we had a problem with is what you're saying is that everyone just cited it without doing their own legwork and just thinking about it and what's what, you know. I don't forget how many ours 16 pages worth of documentation and you know. 50 citations of why we think it's worth more. And so the two biggest criticisms, and most of it was on LinkedIn, so you can find it on there, was our definition of esports was too broad. And so, for example, people thought that including Fortnite shouldn't be included as an esport, and that shouldn't be in there, which, you know, when you have an esports tournament and the winner, what did Kyle Giersdorf make? 6 million as
three,
the,
I think. Was it
three? Million? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but he was like 16 years old.
He's from Pennsylvania. I should know that.
Yeah.
So that doesn't make sense. So they thought it was too broad. And the other big complaint was that we state in there, you know, with any research that you do, you're always going to have limitations. And so we did not include gambling revenues in our estimation because we felt we could not provide reliable estimates as to how much money was made in that sector, or even fantasy esports. And so honestly, our valuation is then undervalued because we didn't include that. But here's the thing. No one, did you see anybody posting online about how Nuzu didn't include gambling estimates into their definition? No. Do you see these people that complained about the paper then provide their own definition of esports? And when we say in like complaints or criticisms, probably only 3 or 4 postings I've seen on that, and a few people liked it. But my point is that it's really easy to criticize, but it's very difficult to try to formulate your own ideas and then have other people criticize it. As a college professor, I get that every semester at the end because I have, 200 students telling me what they like about me and what they don't like about me. So I'm pretty used to it by now. I wouldn't, I'm not the type that's going to lose sleep over a negative evaluation. But for the most part, we got a very good positive reception, like you both are saying, where we wanted people to not just accept the Nuzu figure and to rethink what is the actual estimate of the esports industry.
Look, Nuzu is great. I use it all the time. I think it's a fantastic resource. Absolutely. I subscribe to it. I'm pushing to get it into university. That's the only issue I had with it, but they had their method of looking at it. So they weren't wrong. They just had a clearly defined way of valuing it. And that's their prerogative. I love everything else they do. So I just like yours better because it enables me to push for grant funding and I do, like, hey, send me off to a trip to Cologne to ESL there, please. It's research. It's $25 billion industry. Let me go buy some more hoodies.
I think one of the big issues with especially higher level esports industry, when I say like professional, seems to be a lot of gatekeepers that want to look down upon anybody that is not high-skilled esports player. And so what is their definition of sport of esport? Is it, high-level professional gaming? Do you have to be a professional? And when we think about the definition of esport, I like to compare it to basketball in the U.S. So I can understand if I'm going to go out on my driveway with my kids to shoot around and I'm going to play basketball, right? For me, that'd probably be the equivalent of I'm going to play video games. But I'm not doing esports at that point. And then if we look at the YMCA and they have adult rec basketball leagues, right? Where you have a referee, it's organized, it's competitive. Obviously, people are throwing up bricks left and right, and the skill level's really low at the YMCA league. But that's where, to me, that's when you have everybody is following the same rules, it's organized, it's competitive, the winners and losers based upon skill level, that's where the definition of esports starts. Mm-hmm. And I think other people are believing that, what's the lowest level of skill that you're going to allow to call it esports? And that's where our paper tries to look at a more accepting, accommodating, holistic view of esports. And that's why the industry valuation is larger.
I totally agree with this. My interest is totally grassroots esports. Mm-hmm. My favorite moment as esports is when I'm in Dream and I'm in the LAN part, and the lights go off for the first time, and you feel this wave of people going, it's on. And that, to me, it just gives me shivers even thinking about it right now. And that, for me, is esports. For me, is esports when I go out to a Phoenix Blue here in Sheping, and they're all playing. There's a few playing Smash Brothers in the tournament, and then they kick my ass, of course. But, that's still esports. I'm losing. I'm the worst player there, but I'm experiencing it, and it's fun, and everyone's nice. And, you're absolutely right. Esports, we focus on the top professional level when it's really across all society. It's in schools here in Sweden. I have friends who are high school coaches who are delivering it as part of physical education. It's increasingly pervasive and so much a part of our life that, and just talking about education, you have another project, and I really want to know about this. You have a project. You presented a paper at the University of California Irvine Esports Conference, mm-hmm. and you're preparing the journal article now. And It's about esports educational program. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I did some research with Joey Gariziak from Shenandoah University and Nico Besomes from University of Paris. And I've been collecting a list, an inventory of academic esports degree programs around the world for 2 years. And so what we've been looking at is the proliferation of when these programs started and how really in 2018, it's just really starting to increase, particularly in the US, of the numbers of programs around the world. So back in May 2020, the Staffordshire University in England, somebody in their marketing department on Twitter posted, which this is a university that has an esports degree program. They posted a tweet, on Twitter. It says, "Soon, working in esports will require a university degree." All right. Twitter went off on that. In particular, somebody retweeted with a quote, Decay, and he wrote, "The F it will. I will battle until death against people who claim this BS. GTFO, delete this now." And that quote, I mean, that tweet got 1,200 likes. It got, the industry is definitely very skeptical of the value of an esports degree. So then the response to that, if you know an esports reporter, Adam Fitch, he then interviewed a Staffordshire University esports student, and then it sort of took off from there. And so it really seems like there's a disconnect between a lot of people in the esports industry and then what these degrees are all about. And that's what we want to write this paper about and to show, what are the components of these? What are the courses being offered in there? Are they valuable? And so in 2018, Becker College, which is right near where Stephanie is now, they were the first esports degree program in the US. Staffordshire in 2018 was the first esports degree program in the UK. Kajani University, and I might be mispronouncing that. You can let me know, Brian. And Finland was the first in their university. But what's less known is in 2004, Danube University Krems in Austria had a Master of Science in Esports and Competitive Computer Gaming. That no longer exists, but that was the first that we found. 2007, Chanam Techno University in South Korea had an esports 2-year degree program. 2016 in Finland, they started a 1-year esports performance focused, sort of like a technical associate's level degree. And so really since then, they have been starting to increase these other types of programs. There's now even esports education consulting companies that are starting to pop up. And I just saw a new one today. So we found so far over 75 esports degree programs around the world. When we put them on a map, what's really interesting on the United States, they are all clustered where, Stephanie?
In the east.
In the Northeast. In the Northeast, yeah. There's not one that's lower than Virginia, and there's not one farther than Michigan. They're all up in the Northeast, which is really weird. I guess it's word of mouth, or I'm not quite sure what the total reasoning for that is. But let me give you some of the more statistics and information about these. So we did not include game design degrees, because those have been around for a long time and we didn't want to confuse the two. So these are all degree programs that have esports in the title. And when you look at that, we came across 72 programs. And since we presented this 2 weeks ago, and since then I've found a few more programs, but not many. 29 bachelor's degree programs, 13 master's degrees, 6 technical diplomas, and then 24 certificates or minors around the world. 44% of them had an esports management focus, And then other about 18% had esports business in the title. And then from there, the lesser common areas were communication, performance, and coaching. And so that's sort of what we've been looking at. And it's really interesting to see how this growth is continuing to move in that direction. When we look at, we tried to then quantify how with the quality of these programs. And so the only way we could do the way, one way that we're doing that is we looked at the curriculum that's being offered, and some of the websites don't provide the whole course listings of the programs. But when they did, we looked at the number of courses, or what you might call outside the US modules, that had esports in the title. And for the bachelor's degrees, the average number of esports specific courses was 7 across 22 different bachelor's degree programs. The range though was 3 to 15. So what I'm saying is that there's a program out there that you can get a bachelor's degree in esports and finish that degree with only taking 3 courses that have esports in the title. And so let me further elaborate what I mean by that. So there's a new esports management graduate certificate at a university in the US. They have a master's degree in sport management, okay? So then they created a class called Introduction to Esports. They created a new graduate certificate that's like 15 credits. They took 4 courses from their master's degree in sport management. They added the intro to esports course, and now all of a sudden they've got a graduate certificate in esports management. So we surmise as researchers that they've got one course that talks about esports and all these other courses that talk about sport management, and hopefully you make the connection and now you know everything you need to know about esports. And so for this, you can get a bachelor's degree in esports and depending upon which program you're in, only take 3 courses that have esports in the title.
I'm assuming that this is going into a marketing journal, because to me, it sounds like an awful lot of these programs are marketing programs. Hey, marketing committee, what can we do? Let's make 3 courses, add it to this, shuffle it up, and we'll go and, tap into this market. Oh, look where Steph lives as well. They're all competing against each other.
Yes.
Hey, look what they're doing. Let's do the same.
Yes. They're all in the Northeast. And that's where, especially in the US, they're scrambling for, we don't want to fire faculty. So how can we get the faculty who'd have low enrolled courses more teaching opportunities? And so, another area is who's teaching these courses? Do they have any esports experience? Either, in the industry or research or whatever that might be. And are they teaching the courses in a way that you can integrate esports concepts into it? Or are they just teaching them as business classes or exercise science classes, or, how are they being taught? So when we analyzed 306 different courses that were offered across these programs. We came up, the most common course that was offered was Intro to Esports. The second most common was Intro to Esports Management or Esports Business. The third was an esports event management class. And a lot of times you would host an esports event throughout that course. The better programs had experiential learning where they were doing an internship or they were hosting an esports event, either online or face-to-face. The next most common esports course offered was esports ethics or law. So those are the most common ones. The less common common courses, live streaming, esports marketing, esports coaching and performance, journalism. So that's sort of where we're at right now, but we really want to help people, especially students, even high school students who are interested in majoring in esports and getting into the industry, because there is a lot of value to these programs that they're being taught transferable skills so that if they're being taught marketing skills, they can use it in the esports industry and they'll know the unique intricacies of the industry, but then they don't want to be pigeonholed to only getting an esports job. They want to be able to get a job in marketing elsewhere as well. So it's a sort of a fine line because you want them to be taught a holistic approach to whatever that content you're covering, but also knowing that you're also learning with the unique things about esports.
This is the thing, right? This is the absolute thing. I'm going to have people on this show talking about their educational programs in esports, and I'm torn. I don't know if you need a dedicated degree to esports, maybe a degree in business with a specialization in esports, which is what a lot of those degrees sound like. A master's in esports, actually, I totally agree with. I think that's, yeah. I think a master's degree is where you go, okay, I'm specializing, I'm adding a certain skill set. You know, when students go, look, I've done my degree in marketing. I'm going to do the master's in marketing at the same university. And you go, no. Hold off there. Your master's degree should be a little turnaround or a little bit of extra knowledge, not just the next level rehash of what you've done. So it's I think it's quite a controversial topic. I mean, I've been asked to create a course here, maybe potentially on esports business, which sounds like a lot of work, but I think it's brilliant as a course. And I'd have so much great people and so much good topics to cover because it's fascinating. But these dedicated degree programs, I mean, is there a danger that students sign up and don't come out as prepared as they will be for the real world and a professional career in something else?
I mean, there's always a danger to that. I think the better programs have direct connections to the esports industry. They have experiential learning in them. They're being taught by people who have knowledge of the field and experience within the field. They're being taught by accredited institutions. Now, there's not an accreditation process for these esports industries right now, but I've been in talks with a few other colleagues relating to that. And I agree with you. I think that the graduate level where you can get your base knowledge on whichever area of the industry is your main focus, whether it's journalism or communication or marketing or exercise science, and then you focus on esports at the graduate level is even better. That's what you're seeing, a lot more graduate certificates being offered now as compared to full-blown master's degrees. But the other unique thing is most of these programs are face-to-face. Now, this is pre-COVID, but I think that as things progress, more of these programs will be offered completely online, but the majority of them are all face-to-face at this point, other than the certificate programs.
That's actually what I thought about in developing a course here, maybe with esports, given the nature of the context, that it's one of those courses that is optimized by being online because... Mm-hmm. You know, I taught a social media class once using Yammer, which is, you know, a social network. And instead of using the university, I used the social media to host all the materials and class communication because it was immersive learning. And maybe esport programs are one of those sort of perfectly tailored courses to be delivered online because it's where you need to understand what's going on, especially now with the current COVID crisis.
Sure.
So what do you offer at Slippery Rock? Are there any courses in esports there right now?
I've been in the process of developing coursework, but it is a struggle to, especially when you have a lot of people that want to have hands in the pot. You know, for example, where's the program housed? Is it housed in exercise science? Is it housed in the communication department? Is it housed in marketing? So the College of Business? Is it housed in computer science? And so then when you start to offer coursework, people are going to be, well, I think that this department should be teaching that class. But the faculty in that department may have absolutely no experience or even be able to offer a definition of what is esports. They're Googling it right before the meeting to try to figure out what the hell is esports. And, oh, crap, it's $25 billion. I better... you know, watch a Netflix video or a YouTube video to try to appear like I know what I'm talking about. So my point is that there's a lot of red tape to particularly at public institutions where you have curriculum committees to have approvals and several layers of approval, where at every level you have multiple people looking at what's being proposed, and then they want to give their opinion, and all of that stalls the process of moving it forward. And I'm sure Stephanie knows exactly what I'm talking about, because I see her shaking her head quite a bit.
Sorry, I've been like itching in my seat for like the last 10 minutes, like, oh my God, because this has been like my life for the last 3 years. I've been teaching part-time at a lot of schools, as Seth noticed, in the Northeast, right? Mm-hmm. And I've witnessed the formation of a lot of these programs, the continual evolution of them, as you're talking about. And I think one of the things you were just talking about with the red tape and the bureaucracy is one of the reasons why I'm seeing so many schools around here trying to like shove through these programs, because schools see this as a recruitment opportunity. Right? Administrators who have no idea what esports is, who are Googling it, are saying, we don't know what this is, but we know we want it, right? Because we hear that it's this valuable thing, right? And, you know, because of that, they want to shove through these programs through an approval process as quickly as possible. And that's why I think we're seeing so much of what Seth was describing earlier about the, you know, faculty members who don't necessarily have a background in esports themselves. Like, I have talked to faculty members who talk about Googling what esports is, like the semester before they're assigned to teach a course that they didn't ask for. They're like, I'm a marketing professor and I've been asked to teach esports marketing.
It's unfair to the students because they don't know what they should be looking at when they're And I can understand one course here or there, and if it's like a minor, but if you're coming to an institution where you're wanting to get a degree in esports, you better have some strong experience in the in esports for the people who are teaching the majority of the classes.
Especially considering how much students here pay for those degrees.
For sure, yeah. And that's what I think, so it's starting to stall a little bit with the progression of it, potentially, because now all these universities are really hesitant to start new programs. If they think that it's going to increase enrollment, that's the bottom line, then they're going to do it. But they want to do it with expending the least amount of resources possible. So they would rather have somebody who is, you know, a couple years from retirement, but they've been teaching for 30 years and they are, let's stick with marketing. They have a lot of marketing experience, but maybe no esports experience. They'd rather let that person teach the class than they would hire an adjunct for $3,000 to $6,000, depending upon what your school pays, who's maybe been in the industry for 5 years and is even like a CEO or a former pro player or somebody who is work at an esports org, adjunct it, because then they're saving a little bit of cash. So to answer your question, Brian, I'm in the process of trying to propose a program at Slip Rock, which I was actually hired to do, but every time we have a meeting, the direction of the program changes based upon who's in that meeting. So it's difficult.
Okay, well, we won't let you keep bitching about your own university every day. I'll stop you there so you don't get in trouble.
Stop,
guys, stop. Now, look, here's the thing I see as a challenge. I know certain.
I'm saying that this is in general, not necessarily specific to my university.
Stop, Seth. Right.
I'm like, qualifying over that.
Okay, but like, I know certain aspects of esports, and what I recognize is there's so many people who've lived their whole lives in it that I have my Discord there. I have so many people in federations and associations and in companies that I rely on for a lot of information. I'm always asking questions, which is, it's a good characteristic of a researcher. Admit you don't know stuff. I would be intimidated to teach a bunch of 19-year-olds who's lived and breathed at esports for 7 years. I would be taken so back to the marketing perspective and going, the paper I did, and then going, tell me more. I'd be flipping the classroom so hard on that one, because there's so many people who know so much, and I find myself consistently asking and exploring realizing things that I should know, but it's just so huge and vast that it becomes almost impossible. Do you think there's a big challenge in teaching these students who've been playing Fortnite for 3 years now and know every term and know everything?
I think you need to have a good idea of how one specific esports title goes and come back to that title, but it's impossible for you to be an expert in every esports game title and really and have a general idea of the different genres and how those games are. But I think you have to pull into, you know, you need to look at it as this is a community of learners. Okay. Everybody's coming to this classroom with their own unique experiences. And if you are coming in as I'm the dictator of learning and I'm throwing knowledge down your throat and it's a one-way direction of communication, then you're not a good teacher. Let's put it that way. If you come into it is that I have my own experiences. Everybody else is coming to this class with their own experiences. And you act more as a facilitator of learning of all the people in the classroom, whether it's virtual or face-to-face. And you're accepting of other people's opinions and ideas. And you don't have to agree with them, but we're going to respect them and we're going to let them voice their opinion and their own experiences. Then you're going to cultivate a whole lot more rich learning experience for everyone involved. And that's what I would do teaching esports.
Okay, I've one question. This happened today playing CSGO. I'm playing in Silver 3 with Silver 2 and Silver 4, right? And this guy kept calling everybody noobs, right? Noobs. And I'm thinking, if you're calling everybody noobs, and he's doing too well either, and you're insulting people for being new to the game, and they're playing on your level, does that not mean you're kind of doing a self burn and you're obviously really crap and you've been playing this level for so long? You know, I'm just going, I need someone to explain this to me. Why is he calling us noobs when he's actually insulting himself?
That's one of those gatekeepers I'm telling you about. That's the prevalent, some of the prevalency in gaming. It's unfortunate. It makes people not want to play, you know, when you experience stuff like that. Whether it's any type of discrimination or, because you know that's skill level discrimination, but then you've got gender discrimination, you've got racial discrimination, age discrimination. There's a lot of it, and that's there. You know, I'm sure you have a lot more people knowledgeable in those areas, but that's the whole diversity in sport.
I totally support asshole discrimination in CSGO because that moment when you vote them out and the whole team goes, he's awful. It's just brilliant. It's one of my favorite things.
Oh, you'd like Among Us then, right? You get to vote everybody out.
I need to play that with friends.
Get rid of the asshole.
Esports Research Network Among Us tournament is going to happen. So, Seth, look, we're going to have to wrap this up now. And I think this is going to have to be a two-parter, actually, to be honest.
Sure.
So we're going to give you the final question, which is, what are your future research recommendations for esports? What would you like to see researched? And potentially, what would you give suggestions for maybe some PhD or early career researchers to explore?
Yeah, I would say what's lacking are doctoral programs focusing on esports. So I think that would be an interesting topic. There's a few master's degree programs and I've already been contacted about from people who are wanting to get a PhD focused on esports. What do they recommend? So I think that area is interesting, but I also really think the exercise sports science side of esports is in its infancy, mainly because people in my career field look at video gaming as the cause of the obesity epidemic. Mm-hmm. And certainly screen time is a reason for that, but that's why research is needed to educate people who are, whether you're watching TV or you're sitting and playing a video game, what are things that we can do to be more healthy through a holistic lifestyle. And so I think those two areas would be great to have more focus on higher level education as well as exercise and sports science and esports and performance.
Solid. Well, Seth, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. This was really great. I think we covered a lot of ground. Like Brian said, we're going to have to divide this into two awesome episodes, I think, but that's great. So thanks so much again for being here. And we'll be sure to include all of Seth's relevant contact info, a link to the articles we were talking about below this video that you can check out afterwards. So Seth, thanks so much again for being here.
All right. Thanks for the invitation. Take care.
Oh, and thanks for the paper again. It's 25 billion. You're dead right. I'm gonna go to the bathroom.